New Galaxy Broadcasting proudly presents Integrative Hermetic Health with Hugo Rodier, MD. In this program, we explore a powerful new paradigm for health from the standpoint of integrative medicine. In his practice, Dr. Rodier integrates the ancient Hermetic art and the enduring role of food as medicine with modern nutrition, but also allowing for the wide range of important health practices, including truly valuable medical discoveries, chiropractic, acupuncture, homeopathic and herbal medicine. In this program, Hugo Rodier, an expert in intestinal health and nutrition, will help the audience discover an approach that focuses on actual cures, not the masking of the elegant simplicity of many health solutions for the sake of profit. Profit too long has been an overriding motive of the pharmaceutical companies, and sometimes, sadly, by many in the medical establishment today. Welcome to today's Integrative Hermetic Health Show. My name is Johnny Bluestar, and I'm happy to assist our host, Hugo Rodier, an integrative medical practitioner with a specialty in nutrition and gastrointestinal disorders. And while it is true that Hugo is a medical doctor and a relentless health researcher, his goal in life and his medical practice has always included, shall we say, an existential component, a striving to understand one's individual place in the universe and, if you like, the meaning of life. Hugo does not feel that you can at all realistically separate the question, who am I, from health, happiness, and even personal liberty. Today we will join Dr. Rodier as we explore this question in regards to a way to unlock the door to the whole person and the grandeur of the human adventure. Good morning, Dr. Rodier.
Good morning, Johnny. Thanks for having me.
Well, I'm really pleased to be here and to listen to some of your thoughts on, as I said, the grand human adventure, and who am I?
Well, Johnny, that introduction was really touching. You know me better than my wife.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that is just very, very touched and complimented. And I hope that my patients and our listeners can understand, appreciate what you just said about medicine and health and a visit to a doctor's office involving all these issues for true healing. In fact, you've been to my office. You know, when you walk in, it doesn't feel like a clinic at all. You know, it feels more like a psychologist's office, I hope. The pictures on the wall, the furniture. There's nothing clinical about it. No white walls or hard. What's the word for the cement, the floor you find in clinics? So antiseptic and marbled, like, you know.
It's more like visiting a home,
exactly.
If you like, or perhaps a psychologist's office. Yeah,
right.
there's a sense of, and also the way you deal with, at least me and my wife, we've gone there a number of times, and it's more, I don't know, it's conversation about your health and about other things. It's not just a straight linear type of scientific progression, you know?
Right. It's not geared to doing something to you, but to trigger something in you. And I think that's essential for health. Health is about balance. In fact, that's what the word health means. Another way of saying is homeostasis, equilibrium, harmony, even beauty. So I try to make the office beautiful, which is another word for balance and all that. A balance of what? A total understanding of our place in the universe, who we are, how we fit in the grand scheme of things. If we're missing that, it's going to be so easy to violate our body, if you will, by eating poorly, by associating with people who bring us down, by entertaining thoughts that are not conducive to this balance and health. And so if we're not at a place where we feel connected to our fellow man and God and the universe, if you will, we will not make the best choices in the things that surround us and enter our bodies. And so we can talk all we want about diet and eating better, about cleaning our environment, about relationships. Yeah, people might get it and go home and try real hard, but they will not be successful if they don't catch a vision of balance and equilibrium within themselves, if they don't make it their own, if they don't own it. And so, of course, you know, that would take hours, days, perhaps a lifetime to have an individual get all that. And most people don't, I'm afraid to say. But at least we can try. At least we can try to be an example to people. And then I think I've done my job. In the meantime, I just hope, like Don Quixote, you know, trying to do the right thing, that people will catch this vision. And it's rewarding to me. I shouldn't say always, but since my earliest memories, I've tried to look for truth. I've been a seeker, and that's why I've been a bit of a rogue in the field of medicine, because I feel it's totally misguided. Yes, there's a lot of good in it, about 10%, and that's a figure that I found in medical journals.
Yeah, okay, I'm sorry. 10%, I intuitively agree with that percentage.
Well, that came from the JAMA, an article that came out about 5 years ago, and perhaps I can find the reference on a break. But, that's why I think it's so critical to know who we are. In fact, if you think of the Temple of Apollo in Delphi, what's on top at the entrance? I mean, sorry to put you on the spot, but I think you know the answer.
I don't think so. I don't remember. I'm sorry.
All right. Know thyself.
Oh, Gnothi Seotan.
Yeah, see, I knew you knew.
Well, I thought you were talking about a statue or something.
Oh, yeah. No, right over the entrance.
Well, that is critical, and it's that very place that that a friend of Socrates went to try and find out who was the wisest man in Athens. And the oracle said, Socrates. And Socrates spent a long time trying to figure out, why the hell am I the most important, the wisest person in Athens? And what he found out was that when he asked questions of philosophers and scientists and artists, he found out that they all thought they knew everything. They thought they had answered all the questions, and yet he knew that he didn't know, and that's why he was the wisest.
Yeah, of course, the cynics among us will bring up the research showing that the temple in Delphi sits on top of some fuming hot springs, and they claim the vapors kind of make people become more mystical and more hallucinations, if you will. But hey, what's wrong with that? I mean, a lot of people use pharmaceuticals or other herbs to reach a state of consciousness that will help them with that. And I think, hey, to each his own. I think we can reach those stages without pharmaceuticals or herbs. Be that as it may, it's not the point of the story today. The point is to really know ourselves, and then we can have a better balance and better health. And that's what the show is about.
That what Socrates learned about himself is something that a lot of people perhaps could learn, which is that thinking you know something and actually knowing something are different things.
Exactly.
And our whole culture is based on kind of getting people to think certain things, whether they know it or not.
Well, we live in a materialistic society, and the bottom line is results and profits and very hardcore left brain type of facts and a view of life that negates our true identity. And that's why the question is so critical, the sentence is so critical, know thyself. By now, most people know I'm a Mason, and it's no secret I'm not revealing any secrets or mysteries from our Masonic lodges. But when we open a lodge, the very first thing out of the master's mouth, the guy in charge of opening the lodge, is a statement that asks pointedly for you, or tells you pointedly to remember, keep in mind who we are. And the second statement out of the master's mouth is that we're there for practical purposes, very practical, to subdue our passions, to subdue our passions. Well, see, if we don't subdue our passions, we're not going to have good relationships. We're going to muck up the environment driven by economical, materialistic, energy type of issues. And most certainly, we will not hold our tongue in more ways than one, lack of prudence, and we're going to eat poorly. And so if we learn who we are, if we get it, then we will be able to subdue those carnal appetites that can be deleterious to human health.
Yeah, I think that's really important. You know, an interesting thing about who am I in this culture. The word I, you know, in Latin is ego. And when you think about it, what we talk about, when you talk about subduing the passions and also things like vanity and, you know, self-love and in a narcissistic way, you're talking about subduing the ego. And the real idea of ego is much vaster and much more important than the lower personality, which in our culture, that's what the word ego has become.
Exactly. And, you know, this can become a very involved argument, you know, what the ego means. But by ego, we don't mean to say that we need to stop thinking, we need to stop being rational, but that we realize that our ego is a tool to our spiritual being. And so, you know, I have to bring up this book that I just read, and it's about a woman who had a near-death experience, Nancy Danielson. And I was so impressed. There are so many books out there written by people who have come back from the veil, if you will. And I have not been impressed by any of those books because they get into a whole lot of dogma. They let their dogmatic training or brainwashing, if you will, influence what they see beyond the veil. But Nancy Danielson, Answers from the Afterlife, does not do that. And I was just so amazed to see that what she says she saw agrees with all the ancients, with all the mystics from the past, from our history. Those people who don't have an interest in creating a church or a theology or a religion, those people that understand that we are spiritual beings, raised from a divine light, and that is who we truly, truly are, and we forget, imprisoned in our carnal flesh, if you will.
Well, you know, I'd like to return to that question that you're finding some answers to in the after-death experience, but we're going to take a break now for a couple of minutes, and I'd like to return to that immediately afterwards. Anyway, in this break, first of all, we're going to have a message about Patriot Games, which is a book by Ken Yee. In most of his novels, Ken features certain critical social problems he wishes to address. One of these is called Patriot Games, this novel, which is basically upon the use of torture and interrogation. In many ways, this book discusses a very unpleasant side of human life, which also provoke in us questions about why we were brought into a place or plane that allows such inhumanity to exist. It is part of the existential picture which we need to unflinchingly address if we are seeking real answers. And perhaps some of those answers do lie in the after-death experience.
This is Johnny Bluestar, CEO of New Galaxy Enterprises, a media content development company. The original productions by Amazon, Hulu, and Netflix in particular has opened up a new and powerful form of television that has both global income and still unexplored profit potential as convergence between offline and online media continues to blossom. We can help persons needing creative help to turn their ideas for television pilots into actionable, marketable scripts. There's probably nothing more exciting in the field of entertainment than these new vistas online as that capacity crosses more and more to the big screen. And the opportunities for instantaneous online projections of any type of media in that perennially popular venue. To learn more about New Galaxy, see samples of our work, or talk to us about your project, please go to www.newgalaxyenterprises.com and fill out the contact form. Patriots Act is a Brent Marks legal thriller written by Kenneth Ede, a novelist and attorney, often appearing on Threshold Radio. It's about Ahmed, a naturalized U.S. citizen formerly of Iraq, who was sent to Guantanamo Bay detention camp with no real knowledge of a crime he has committed. Brent Marks, a California attorney, is originally hired by Ahmed's wife to fight for his release. The novel opens with a convincing mock execution, a mode of torture meant to break down a prisoner in a brutal and traumatic way that foreshadows Ahmed's actual death in the hands of his accusers.
Ahmed felt the butt of the rifle strike his spine as his knees buckled and he hit the floor.
Move faster, Haji. Up against the wall. Stop there. Good. Listen up. My name is Sergeant Brown. you're here because you refused to cooperate in the interrogations. The decision has been made to execute you by firing squad.
Wait, I'm an American citizen.
Ahmed felt the black bag ripped from his head and for the first time faced his aggressors. He found himself facing a man in camouflage fatigues, holding an M16 to his chest. Beside him, an 8-man firing squad with their rifles in ready position.
I have the right to talk to an attorney. This is all a big mistake.
Brown fastened a leather strap around Ahmed's waist, pinning his spine to a wooden post.
Yeah, a big mistake. You should have cooperated when we asked you about your superiors in Al-Qaeda.
I don't know anyone in Al-Qaeda.
Do you have any last statement, Haji?
But I...
I repeat, do you have any last statement?
I'm not a terrorist. I'm an American citizen. I've right to a lawyer and a trial. You've denied me these rights. You will answer to God for your crimes.
I think you can see who has all the rights here. Ready? Aim!
The 8 pointed their rifles at Ahmed. Shivering uncontrollably, Ahmed's knees gave way, and he hung on the post like a man crucified.
Fire!
The deafening explosion of the 8 rifles was the last thing Ahmed heard. He felt the bullets hit his flesh, and his body crumpled forward, hanging lifelessly from the post like a scarecrow.
Today we will be presenting 3 songs by the cosmic rock band Lightstorm, created by a husband and wife team, Jonima and Kalusu Wintergate. Their songs are often spiritually centered in their mission in life, as in their music is always to tear away the veil that keeps this planet and its human populations from reaching their full potential, which is what we're discussing today. The first song is called Love is the Source. Later in the show, we'll be playing Love is Enough and the Dance of Love. Here we go.
My lover. love embraces us all in the end. We'll all reach the goal, awareness of self, true oneness we will comprehend. With silence, inner silence,
back with Dr. Hugo Rodier. We've been discussing a book by Nancy Denison. Can you tell us a little bit about that book, which is about the near-death experience?
Sure. Nancy Denison is a lawyer, so she had been very left-brain and very materialistic and very much into power and dominion and making money. And so she wasn't indoctrinated into a specific ideology or dogma or religion. So I think her mind was more prepared to see what she saw without the prism of these training, these ideas that can color whatever you see. And her book, Answers from the Afterlife, is responding to people commenting on her experiences, which go quite opposite to what most people write about, crossing the veil. And rather than go into the book in detail, I think it might be better for people to read it themselves and not be influenced by our comments. But if having said that, you might have a specific question about what she talks about.
Well, how did she die? Just out of curiosity.
If I recall, she died at the hospital. I think she had some kind of cancer.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And so it was hard for her to come back, which she was given a choice to come back or stay there. She chose to come back to spread the word about what she has said. And I'm glad she did, because, again, her comments on what she experienced are so, so different from other NDEers.
Are you familiar with Daniel Brinkley?
Yes.
Well, that was I don't know what you think of him, but that was a very big breakthrough for me because he was such a bad person. You know, we were talking about the Ken Eads book. We just played it, you know, Patriot Games, about people being tortured, and this guy was a CIA assassin.
Oh my.
and he came back. He came back very bruised, very sick. He had been burned by a lightning strike in his home, and very drastically burned, and he woke up in a morgue and pulled whatever was covering him off, and he could barely function, but he was a completely changed person. And he had gone through a life review, and so he had looked at himself in an entirely different way. And so it was that was the first time I really got into it. You know, this was years ago, but I thought it was amazing, and I've kind of followed him ever since. I felt that, that in the NDE experiences I've seen, it's transformatory because they're in a place where they are surrounded by perhaps a truer sense of I than we are here, right?
Exactly. Thanks for sharing that. Your comments triggered a whole lot of thoughts. The first one is that we've always heard from the ancients that those who fall and rise again have more merit and more strength than those who never fall. And that's been so reassuring to me, because I've fallen a few times.
Oh, really?
We all do. It's part of human nature. Someone who never falls. Were you being sarcastic?
Okay.
You got me.
That's all right.
All right. Well, And so I pay more attention to people like Brinkley, to people like Nancy Denison, to people like Wei Wu Wei. Have you ever heard of Wei Wu Wei?
Only in Chinese restaurants. I don't know.
Well, he writes as if he were some monk on top of a mountain in Tibet. But he turns out to be a 6'3", obese, white guy from Ireland, a millionaire.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And then the other guy that I really like is Balsekar, who's a banker in India. And so this is balance, you know, strength and wisdom, the male and the female, the tough and the soft, the rich and the poor, the material and the spiritual. And so we always run the danger of creating the impression that we don't appreciate the material part of life. No, we're talking about a balance here. And so I talk about these things with my patients at every chance I get, because most of them come in saying, "Doc, I couldn't do your diet. I couldn't get off sugar." I said, whoa, that's okay. I'm glad that you came back and told me about it. But let me tell you about Atlas, is the next thing out of my mouth most
Atlas,
of the time.
Okay.
Yeah, Atlas, whose mother was Gaia, as you know, Mother Earth.
Right.
Okay, so Hercules turned out to be a weakling, a pushover. And he's always whining that people were beating up on him. And so finally Gaia says, "Okay, Hercules, listen, from now on, every time you're pushed down and you fall and strike me, Mother Earth, and fall to the ground and touch me, Mother Earth, you'll get up stronger. You'll fall, touch me, get up stronger. Fall, get up stronger. Fall, get up stronger." And that's how we learn. I mean, most of us learn by at the point of the boot, if you will. Very few get it from the get-go, but most of us learn by falling.
Yeah.
And so I tell my patients, this is who we are. We're trapped in a body that has passions and appetites that are there for a reason, for survival. So instead of negate them, let's sublimate them or roll with it and subdue them, not negate them or hide them. As you know, repression is a terrible master. So all these things can be boiled down to knowing who we are. And of course, you know, listeners have their different religions and ideas, and whatever they can come up with, as long as it's the divine conquering the material, we're good with that, because that's a message we hear from all religions and theology and philosophy.
I'd like to point out that I'm going to read something. It's just a few sentences, but it's about near-death experiences. "The oldest surviving explicit report of an NDE in Western literature comes from the famed Greek philosopher Plato, who describes an event in his 10th book of the legendary classic, The Republic. Plato discusses the story of Err, a soldier who woke on his funeral pyre and described his journey into the afterlife. But the story is not just a random anecdote for Plato. He integrated at least three elements of the NDE into his philosophy: the departure of the soul from the cave of shadows to see the light of truth, the flight of the soul to a vision of pure celestial being, and in subsequent recollection of the vision of light, which is the very purpose of philosophy." So you're talking about a really big experience with, you know, the people like Nancy and Danyon and Err. That experience of themselves is not just a little thing. It's quite different on the other side, but also sometimes in this lifetime with people who discover this extra dimension of themselves, this extra consciousness.
Exactly. So I'm glad that you brought that up, philosophy, the Greeks. It turns out that, as you probably know, the Greeks got everything from Egypt through Pythagoras, who really understood, I think he did, the mystery of Giza and the Sphinx. It turns out that all of those were born in Heliopolis, which got all the priests there got all their information from Helwan, south of Cairo, which has been 100% linked to Göbekli Tepe. So we're talking about very ancient stuff. And so let me backtrack a little to the Sphinx, the mystery of the Sphinx. Here we have a figure, a monument, that mixes man, bird, bull, and lion. And these are very, very ancient symbols that were first, that have been found even in Göbekli Tepe. And so what does the mystery of the Sphinx say? To know, to will, to dare, and to be silent.
Ah, okay.
And so
that's a very important concept.
Right. So that's why, Johnny, in more than one occasion, I've told you how I have mixed feelings about talking so much. Because in my old age, I cherish being silent. I think as much as we want to talk and somebody has to talk, the bottom line is people will get it at their own pace. You know, all we can hope to do is to tweak someone out there into looking into these things a little deeper and learn from themselves. So let me, again, backtrack to the Sphinx. What are the symbols? Well, you have in the east, you have the lion, a symbol of wisdom. In the west, the bull, a symbol of strength. In the south, a man, a symbol of balance of the two, strength and wisdom. And in the north, a bird, and the bird that aligns on a pillar is a symbol that we first find in Göbekli Tepe. And that is a symbol of Cygnus, the Milky Way, how souls come and go up and down the north ecliptic. And that's where the birth of souls occurs. I mean, these are just symbols that the ancients figured out looking at the skies. And so by focusing on the north, a place of darkness, they called it, then we're totally focused on who we are, where we come from. Know thyself was the dictum of the sages. And I think if modern man doesn't get these simple things and continues to play on their iPads and smartphones and are hell-bent on transhumanism and becoming a Borg, we are going to be in deep doo-doo.
Well, we're going to continue with this discussion, and I'd like to get back to the to know, to dare, to will, and be silent and what that might mean. For understanding the sense of I. We're going to pause for a few messages now, followed by Lightstorm's Love is Enough.
My company, New Galaxy Enterprises, is a California corporation specializing in the creation of media and promotional content. We are focused on original, innovative projects that are good for humanity. These projects could be nonfiction books or novels, fictional screenplays or documentary content, websites and website content, commercial advertising content for print, audio, or video products on the internet, television, or radio, musical scores for advertising, television, or film, video, audio editing, etc. We want to promote products and projects that support the environment, encourage a healthy experience in living, developing, nurturing, and useful technology, and offering platforms for positive, socially constructive entertainment or informative, transformative media. Our experience in creating a variety of products like this is rather vast, and we offer client-based and collaborative products, as well as the opportunity of active investors to join us in the creation and promotion of proprietary products, some of which are in latter stages of development. For more information, go to www.newgalaxyenterprises.com. That's www.newgalaxyenterprises.com. If you're interested in talking to us, just fill out the contact sheet and we will get back with you.
If you're not fond of books, you may be interested in watching Dr. Rodier's slide presentation on his website, hugorodier.com. That's HUGORODIER.com. It lasts 48 minutes and explains the simple roots of all diseases with pictures and graphs that are easy to understand. The presentation includes basic principles of physics, philosophy, anthropology, and history to truly integrate the most vital pillars of human health.
Who seem hurt and lost without a goal. Just remember who we are and share your light and love. Got to hold on to the truth, dear. In the silence points the way. Simply trust your intuition. It's God's voice guiding us each day. Service will soon bring us face to face with our God self. Just remember we are spirit and know we are one.
It's very interesting. In our last conversation, you were talking about the meaning of the Sphinx, and you identified these different creatures, including the man, you know, the lion, the bull, the man, and the bird, to the statements to know, to dare, to will, and be silent. I have struggled with the meaning of that for a long time, but I think in my struggles, I came up with an interesting insight. You see, I think that people who practice certain types of what I would call lower magic, they try to will things to happen in the sense of they say, you know, I know I want this. I'm going to try and get it. I'm going to will it, make it happen, and then I'll be quiet and somehow it will manifest. But I don't think that's the real way of understanding to will, because I think to will means to pass this desire, this hope, this even feeling of certainty into the higher, your higher nature, which is something you can also be conscious of besides your lower nature. So I think what's happening there, if you understand it, it's a very powerful tool of manifesting your higher nature here on Earth as well as in other levels.
I 100% agree. I'm so glad to hear you say that, because I recall this whole thing, at least in our generation, was rehashed by the Celestine Prophecy. Do you recall that book?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I never felt good about that. You know, it seems so juvenile to kneel down and say, this is what I want, and God, you're going to have to give it to me because I really will it. I mean, that to me just has never sounded right.
Right.
And it's totally contrary to what I've been hearing through the ages, through the ancient wisdom. So I'm glad that you said it. Now, go ahead.
Well, I think that one of the biggest, another big stimulus in that way, which I don't agree with either, would be The Secret.
Exactly, yeah.
And I always felt, actually for me, you know, the big breakthrough came, and, you know, I managed this group called the Wayne Dyer Experience, where Wayne Dyer speaks of, he speaks of the intention. And he says, what you got to understand is intention is a field. It's like a field of energy. And he's quoting Castaneda. But what he means is that your sense of I, what Dyer calls your source, what other people may call many things, including God, that part of you, that part of your I, that expansive part of you that is connected to God, is where all the action really is. And so,
yes.
So when you try to force it with your ego, you get some kind of, I think you often get really bad consequences.
Exactly. So going back to the Sphinx, you have wisdom, the lion, to know these things, who we are. Then you have the strength of the bull. Well, we're not going to deny that we are material people and we have an ego. It's a matter of balance, represented by man in the South.
Uh-huh.
And so to know is wisdom. To dare is the bull, strength.
Right.
To will, to put it all into action in a manner that is taking into consideration who we truly are, is the man. And then we become silent in the North, the bird.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's the same thing. In fact, the riddle goes, the Sphinx riddle, if you recall, what walks on four legs, then two, and then one. And you know the answer to that, I'm sure.
The Sphinx, right?
Right. Well, it's man, because we first crawl on four legs, then we walk on two, and then when we're old, sorry, it's three, we walk on three because of a cane. So we finally recognize when we're old or wise, ideally, is that we need to lean on that consciousness and have its will, its desires, its plans supersede ours. And that's something very hard for proud men to understand.
Well, I think part of the problem is that we really have, in a certain sense, a difference between our lower and our higher self. They're both us.
Exactly.
For me, I think I've had some glimpses, and maybe sometimes on a regular basis, but I'm still inured in this lower aspect of myself a lot of the time. And so I began to realize that this higher part of me has a different way of thinking and looking at things than this lower part of me. And so sometimes when I get really upset about something, I can stop and start seeking that other level of myself. And it does actually work, because I will actually start changing my thinking. But it's taken a long time to get to even this point.
Exactly. And that's why the four cardinal virtues are also points of the Sphinx, the four points of the compasses: temperance, prudence, fortitude, and justice. And so if you work those words around, you'll see that they fit: strength, wisdom, balance, and the silence in the North. Meaning that when we are fully aware who we are, these two parts of our natures, the higher and the lower, the material and the spiritual, yes, we'll have all those passions. Yes, we'll have all those appetites. Yes, we'll acknowledge them, but we'll have the prudence and the temperance to say, whoa, whoa, wait a minute. Let's count to 10 here. Yeah, it's okay. I hate the guy's gut. I do want to eat that pie, et cetera, et cetera. But you have that wherewithal where you can stop and say, okay, but I better not, because in the long run, in the long term, it's not good for me to yield to my passions.
You know, there's another thing about the silence.
So this is all related to health, you know, circling back to the beginning of the show. So we mustn't lose track of that. All these thoughts hopefully can trigger in people a desire to be healthy, a desire to stop, to get off the treadmill and truly be healthy and stop relying on pharmaceuticals that only treat symptoms, to eat better, to eat your veggies, to exercise, to have relationships where you are committed to their well-being, to helping them, to refrain from judgment, to refrain from finding guilt in everyone. Of course, you know, I'm not saying I'm above all these things. I'm just saying, having caught a bit of a glimpse of who we truly are, yes, I have my moments, but I'm more able to subdue my passions as I walk in other people's shoes and live my life on a daily basis.
Yeah, I think that it's a discipline to know yourself, to find out the difference between this higher level and this lower level, because this lower level can often disguise itself as being very right, especially when it comes to justice. You want to just destroy somebody because they did the wrong thing. But if you look at those people who have done very bad things, but you still determine to look at them as a child of God with all the perfections in it, it can really change the way you look at them. And it can trigger that sense of love that I think is inherent in the higher self, which is not ordinary human love, but is something very special.
Exactly. Well, you know, we find all these messages in Christianity, and I always like to mention that because most of our listeners are Christians, so they might be wondering, well, how does all fit with the teachings of the Master? They're all there.
Yes, they are.
They're all there. Yeah. And allegories and pithy sayings of the Master. The one that comes to mind is when the disciples ask him, where's the kingdom of heaven? And the Master answers, well, it's not in the sky, or the birds would get there before you do. Well, it's not in the earth, or the cows would get there before you do, or cows or something like that. But rather, I tell you, it's within you, in your heart. And unless you become as a child, you'll never get it. Meaning, you know, you have to put off your ego, is what the Master was saying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to truly see who you are inside.
The sense of I that we have, which is in the lower nature, that's capable of expansion to a much higher thing. And it has, in other words, you don't really lose your sense of I. It's just modified and expanded in a certain way.
Exactly.
And as you do that, a lot of that floss, you know, all that extra stuff, that negative stuff, sort of dissipates. And you can act more clearly and securely in what you do.
Yes, it's such a paradox. I had a conversation with a Jungian psychologist the other day, and the ego thing came up. And he was a bit forceful, saying, no, this thing about denying the ego just won't work, because we needed to organize our thoughts. And he says, he added, a mental illness is an ego with a weak ego that does not understand boundaries. And, you know, I left it at that because it would have taken a long time to go through all this. But I understood his point. We need the ego. We need a good, strong, organized ego. And if we don't have it, we're mentally ill. True. But as we work on the ego, we mustn't think that it's all there is. And as you said, we can add to it, transcend it, go beyond, not, without denying it, as the good psychologist thought I was trying to say.
Yeah. Well, I think that, you know, as I proceed with my sort of adventures in ordinary life, I get glimmerings of how to do things better, how to do things in a more clear way, how to be more streamlined and efficient in accomplishing good things. And I think that your ordinary sense of self can be expanded even in a practical way by listening to your higher self.
Exactly. And you know, the ultimate paradox, and I'm not going to be as clear as I would like, because what I'm going to say, it can be a bit shocking to most listeners. But ultimately, Johnny, there is only one consciousness. To separate ourselves from our fellow man, from God and the universe, is an illusion. In other words, there is only a God when there's an ego. That's separation. In other words, all the language we use can really get us away from very simple concepts that we've known about for a while. And so, in a paradoxical way, to always think of us and them and God is an illusion. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. And a very good way to end our little journey today. I really wanted to thank you. Do you want to give some contact information for us?
Yes, I can be reached through my website, hugorodier.com. Phone number, address, and is there, and also slide presentations, newsletters, and blogs. I hope people take advantage.
Well, thank you for visiting us today. And after our official break, we'll end with the beautiful Lightstorm song, Dance of Love. For more information about Dr. Rodier's practice, books, blogs, and newsletters, contact Hugo Rodier, MD, at www.hugorodier.com. That's HUGORODIER.com.